Hello and welcome to Viva Pod Vegas. Oh, thank you very much for listening. This is episode one, Love Me Tender from 1956. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And Mike, we are here blessed by another Nicolas Cage movie giving us reason to get together
That's right.
After years of us talking about doing Viva Pod Vegas. We are finally here, having watched the first Elvis Presley movie.
We made it.
We're here to talk about it.
Yes, Love Me Tender. It has been years of us in the back room talking about projects and what we'd like to do, and we have been threatening each other with this one for a long time now, so I'm glad that we finally had reason to pull the trigger.
It is very exciting. There is a lot that I have to say about this movie. Before we get going, I think this is an interesting place to start because this is very clearly not an Elvis movie.
Right.
This is a movie with Elvis Presley in it.
Yes.
He's not the star.
Nope.
He dies.
He dies. He gets shot.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
So his mom was at the premiere, and she burst into tears when
she
died.
Saw Elvis dead.
And
dude,
I'm sure everybody
burst into tears.
She said, "Promise me that you will never die in another movie."
Oh, and I promise you, Mama.
Very nice. I think he dies one more time. I didn't see what movie it was.
Okay.
I think there's one other movie where he dies.
Okay.
So we're going to get to that at some point. His mom was devastated.
This is basically a Western, cookie-cutter Western, I'd say. But like, this is a good movie for him to sort of get his bearings, I feel.
Let's use this, what we probably should have used the episode zero for, but we just rambled about other nonsense for a while. Before I talk about Love Me Tender, let's talk about Elvis Presley as an actor.
Let's do it.
So before he was a singer, he wanted to be an actor. He apparently worked at a movie theater
when
he was a kid. Loved watching James Dean movies, Marlon Brando movies, Tony Curtis movies. Studied their acting, learned their lines from their movies.
I could see a little Tony Curtis in here.
Apparently, when he showed up on set for this movie, he not only knew his lines, he knew the entire movie.
Oh, it's one of those guys.
So early on said, "I don't want to sing in movies. I want to be bigger than my songs. I want to be taken seriously as a film star."
Oh, well.
Colonel Tom Parker, Tom Hanks himself, said,
"One day.
No, 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 no.
That's not what we're here for.
The script doesn't matter. The soundtrack matters.
Yeah.
You're going to be singing all these movies.
You're a commodity, boy."
There goes that.
Yeah. Although, I will say, look, he will get a chance to shine. It's not all about singing. I mean, just based on this first movie alone, like, there's lots of songs, but it's not just about singing.
So. Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. In March of 1956, the movie comes out in 1956. In March of 56, he does a screen test for Hal Willis. It takes 3 days. Elvis performs two scenes from The Rainmaker, and he lip syncs to Blue Suede Shoes.
Okay. Because Francis Ford Coppola ended up making The Rainmaker with Matt Damon.
Gotcha. Maybe is there a remake?
I think so.
Hal Wallace. I don't know if I said Hal Willis. Hal Wallace. So Wallace's partner, Joe Hazen, said, quote, "As a straight actor, the guy has great potentialities."
Not a word.
His first screen test, a scene from the William Inge play The Girls of Summer, resulted in drama coach Charlotte Clary saying, quote, "Now that is a natural-born actor."
Whoa, okay.
He does feel in this movie like he's got a burst of something.
He feels comfortable, I'll tell you that much. I don't know if he's fully aware of what's going on, but he seems to want to be there.
Real hot take. Kid's got something. I think he's going to be something.
I'll just tell you, if he doesn't make it in acting, I think he's got some backup.
So we were talking about the timeline of this all. This is crazy. So he was born in 1935, right? This movie comes out in 1956. So he was 21 when he shot this, when this came out, right? His first singles came out in 1954. So he was 19 when his first singles came out. His first albums came out this year, 1956.
Wow.
That was Elvis Presley was the first one. Then Elvis, which is the one I got for $1, the second one. He is barely he's a baby. And he's already this massive star.
And he's not even a music star for very long when he's suddenly, in the movies. He's, immediately in the movies. The main thing that I kind of occurred to me watching this and, doing this project and stuff is, there was, now we really take for granted the internet and stuff. But even growing up, I had MTV.
Well, you want your MTV.
We all wanted it, and we all got it. We were accustomed to seeing the people who were singing the songs. And back then, people, not everyone had TV. TV was really new and expensive. You could go to the movie to see Elvis. He could reach so many more people. And plus it's an hour and a half music video. You'll go and you'll see four Elvis songs. He's performing them as if they're there's no word for it back then. So they just called it musical. But this is sort of beyond the musical because he seems one of the first guys, more so.
Because it's not a musical.
It's not a musical. And not like Sinatra, who is a much different demographic. This guy was targeting the teen demographic. And they took this dramatic Western and injected it with Elvis and turned it into something hybrid. And it's kind of crazy. I really feel like this is like a nexus point, like the forerunner to a lot of stuff to come.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that because I have a lot of trivia about sort of the evolution of this movie. After he does his screen test for Hal Wallace, Wallace offers him a contract for one movie with an option for six more.
Whoa, that's a big option.
Contract was finalized in April and said that he could do a movie, one movie per year for another studio as well. So this is basically locking him down for Paramount. He could do one a year for, so because we're doing 30, or there's like 30 movies in 13 years. So he's doing two and a half a year. So he was considered for The Rat Race.
Okay.
Not the Seth Green Rat Race.
No.
Different Rat Race. And The Rainmaker. Mm-hmm. Those didn't, like, they did not
pan out.
They had an idea to pair him with Jerry Lewis.
Oh, okay.
That didn't work out. They turned to Love Me Tender, the movie we were talking about today, a role that had been turned down by Jeffrey Hunter and Robert Wagner because it was too small.
Oh, look at that.
Once Elvis gets there, they're like, oh, we got Elvis. Let's jack up the, you know.
That's cool, yeah. That's almost like what we were talking about with Cage and Primal, where it seems like, we got Cage for this role, we got to pump, we got to change the movie.
Yeah. So according to Presley's then-girlfriend, June Wanico,
okay,
she said he was reluctant to take the role because it was so small, and because he died in the end. She told him, characters audiences are most likely to remember are the ones who have a tragic fate.
Yeah.
They're going to remember that you die. And he's like, I'll do it.
That's smart.
And then I said, you know, his mom cried.
And then Maggie laughed. She's such a little trooper.
So then producer for the film, David Weisbart, said, quote, I think he provides tremendous additional value in the role, a.k.a. this movie made back its budget on the first weekend because it made $1 million its first weekend.
A.k.a. thank God Elvis took this part and turned this nothing movie into something.
Quote, he will surprise a lot of people who go to see him because his presence, they think his presence is just a gimmick. Or they're going to see him because they think he's a gimmick, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, he plays an acting part in a legitimate story. He does it very well. He sings, but the script is so constructed that the situations are logical.
Well,
when the family is
close.
When the family is together after the war or at a bazaar and a picnic, there are folk tunes or hoedowns that, except for the title piece, a ballad, have Elvis's rhythms.
Yes.
With his long brown hair and his sideburns, he looks legitimate too in terms of the period. This is a Civil War movie. So he does look like he...
Yeah, I was questioning, though, these are not Civil War era songs. These are songs from the 50s, and like that's what was so jarring about the period piece. You know what I'm saying? I was like, it's not that I want him to sing like She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain or, you know, a song that was popular then, but like it did sort of jump out at me as like, this isn't a song you would sing in like the 1800s.
My favorite part of this movie, which made me laugh every time, is when he's at the picnic, when they're at like the build the schoolhouse.
Yeah, I love
that. There's the sign, which is maybe my favorite sign in any movie ever. Help finish the schoolhouse, buy something even if you don't need it. Basically just give us money. But he's performing two songs, like a kind of like a fundraiser, and this is 1865. He's doing his Elvis hip dancing to audiences 90 years before, like, he collectively broke the brain of society.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like, I was like, if you've ever wondered what people in 1865 would have thought of Elvis, captured on film.
There you go, right there.
Because he's, like, doing his, like, thing, and then he'll just, like, stop, and he'll just do his, like, hip, his quiver. The girls in the crowd will lose their mind. But I'm thinking, this is 1865. Like, they're not, like, it's basically...
This is Ed Sullivan.
It's the Back to the Future, like, your kids are going to love it. But, like, this is, like... Your great-great-grandkids are going to love it because this is like, it's like four generations before them.
It's so funny you say Back to the Future because I was thinking Back to the Future 3 where you have ZZ Top playing one of their songs, but they're actually playing it in the style of the 1800s in that movie with like fiddles and drums.
This is just 50s rock and roll, but like in 1865.
Yeah, it's like being, it's like the Ed Sullivan show.
The last quote that I took from the wiki, the Los Angeles Times review of this movie said, quote, Elvis can act, so help, which I love that they wrote this.
S'help?
S apostrophe help, so help me. But s'help me, the boy's real good, even when he isn't singing.
Huh.
So this movie was originally going to be called The Reno Brothers, because that's the last name in this. But when advanced sales of Love Me Tender, the single, passed a million, they were like, we're going to name the movie that, so people know that this
so
is that.
So smart. So fucking smart.
This is the only time in history that Elvis Presley played a historical figure.
Yes, the Reno Brothers. I was telling you before, this is like one of five or six like token plots for Westerns. Definitely have seen this movie like five times before. Where it's just, well, we haven't gotten into the plot necessarily yet, but like this is a very standard plot for Wes. And I love the idea of it, but you know.
So here's the plot of the movie, is that the movie is about Elvis's brother, played by
brothers
but mostly the one brother, Richard Egan, who plays Vance.
It's a great voice, Vance.
And he's 14 years older than Elvis, so he was born, I think, 1921, Elvis is born in 35, so he's like the older brother by kind of a lot. And they're off in the Civil War.
Yes.
And Elvis, I think, was too young to go to the Civil War because he's probably supposed to be like
18,
maybe
15, even though they were taking anybody.
He was probably like when the war, maybe he was 14, and by the time it ended, he was 18 or whatever.
I feel like I feel like he was too young before the war started to go out, but now that it's over, he would have been okay to fight or something.
So Vance and his other brothers are at the war. The war is over. They're like, you know, Robert Lee.
The movie starts, and it's a bunch of northern guys going, the war is over. The war is over.
Vance and all of his, you know, his platoon.
Yeah.
His motorcycle gang, because that's what this movie is about. That was my guess.
And they kind of are a motorcycle gang.
They basically are. They have what they call the spoils of war. They have like $12,000, which a crazy amount of money.
Well, they rob the livery after the war is over, so they don't know the war is over. They think it's still going on. So they're like, yeah, we'll rob the North and take their money.
But then later they're wanted for that. So they have a lot of money.
Yeah, tons.
And then they return home.
Right.
But in the meantime, Elvis's family had gotten, especially Mama Vance, Mama Reno, had gotten word that Vance was killed.
Right.
And so in the time between that and that, the woman that Vance was promised to, this woman named Kathy.
Gorgeous.
Who is played by Deborah Padgett.
Yep.
Her parents were killed.
Mm-hmm.
So she moved in with Elvis and with Elvis's mom. You know, she was basically not promised to, but she was going to marry Vance.
Betrothed. Yeah,
and they took her in. But then they got word that Vance died, and so Elvis and Kathy get married.
It's a real brothers situation going on. You remember that movie Brothers I've been bringing up a lot lately, where Tobey Maguire goes to war, and he's married to Natalie Portman, and he's considered dead or missing in action, and so she gets together with his brother, played by Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
It's a real brother situation.
So Elvis plays a guy named Clint Reno, and so he marries Kathy, and they've been married for 3 months. It's not like they've been married a while, but he's like, Vance, I'm so in love with her, and he's like, I can tell. Like, he seems okay with it.
Because he's like, look, you thought it was dead.
You took her in when she needed to be taken in.
Yeah.
I mean, look at her. She's beautiful. How can I blame
you? Even though they did do the deed, Vance tells Clint they didn't, and Elvis accepts that. And so, like, it's a weird kind of thing where it's like, all right, brother, like,
yeah,
you could have, I don't know.
And so basically, as the movie goes on, Elvis is sort of, not gaslit, but he's sort of gaslit.
Kinda. Yeah, he is.
Like, all of Vance's friends are like, oh no, Vance still loves Kathy, and Kathy still loves, look at,
and Elvis is. And they kind of do.
And they kind of do, but also, like, by the end of the movie, like, they're very clearly like, I'm not going to get in the middle of this. Like, you are his now, like, not that you're property, but like, you're his now, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to be a jerk about, like, you're, I'm not going to ruin this.
Yeah, and like, Vance even gets convinced to return all the money and everything. Like, there's a really cool moment where the gang, like, kind of accidentally breaks him out of that train, remember? Like, they free him from a train he doesn't really want to get freed from, which complicates
things. Because they're like, why would he confess if he was just going to get broken out? They're like, well, he didn't want to get broken out.
He didn't want to get broken out, and he didn't know he was even going to confess at the
cops. The cops in this movie are, like, on par with, like, Gone in 60 Seconds. They're, like, they're competent cops. They're like, oh, yeah. Like, they get the clues right away. They're like, oh, yes, okay. As the movie goes on, you know, it's Vance trying to kind of reconcile with the fact that they should give the money back, because they're, like, sort of spending a little bit of money here and there, and then they realize that the war is over. So it's he gets arrested. He's going to give the money back. Elvis is being gaslit to be like, oh, no, Kathy and Vance are still in love.
Yeah.
Elvis is then, because he's kind of the innocent, because he's not actually part of the thing, he's kind of the go-between. So Vance is like, go tell the sheriff that we're going to return the money. We're going to meet here. I'm going to give the money back. Elvis is like, you got it, boss. And he goes. But then when he comes back, there's sort of like three good friends and there's three bad friends.
Right.
And the three bad friends are like, oh, no, you, like, this is not going to happen. And then there's like a shootout. And I sort of had read, sort of spoil myself, that Elvis was going to die. He did not die in the way that I thought he was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the bad friends are like, we need the money. And then they start shooting at Vance. And then Elvis is like, oh, this isn't going to happen. They say he starts shooting at them. Like, they hit Vance, I think, right? He gets hit, but he goes down, but he's not dead. And then the bad guys shoot and kill Elvis.
Yeah.
Kathy mourns his body.
It's insane.
They bury him in the family graveyard, and then
the ghost of Elvis
sings Love Me Tender over the closing credits.
Oh my God, it's insane.
But apparently, the crowds who saw test screenings, were so bummed that Elvis died, the ghost was after the fact, because they're like, Elvis can't be, like, he needs to live on.
Yeah.
So they brought him back, and they had him singing at the end there.
That's beautiful. I was kind of like, oh, this is very bland, sort of, not boring, but like, I've seen this before. Yeah. Like, I was waiting for them to use Elvis, right? Aside from the singing and dancing.
He doesn't show up for a while.
Yeah. And I love how he's introduced in a deep background like that, out of focus, and he comes like running up in the screen. There was a moment in this movie, everything kind of kind of clicked for me, and I got really excited. And it's sort of towards the end when the gang shows back up and they're trying to tell Elvis, like, oh no, she's going to meet your brother, they're still in love, this and that. Elvis gets so goddamn angry, furious, and starts beating his wife.
He pushes her, shakes her and slaps her.
He hits her, but it's behind the horse, so you can't see. But she comes up.
You see it and you hear it.
And she comes up holding her face with her hand. He goes into a Cage rage, dude.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, I think Cage is drawing from this performance or from maybe more Elvis down the line, because he reached a place of realness in this that I was definitely not expecting. And I was like, damn, Elvis, this is awesome.
Considering that he's 21 years old, this is his first movie.
Yeah.
This is like Cage and Valley Girl, kind of, right? Like, this is off to a good start. Like, again, this is not... So from what I've heard, this is one of his better movies.
Okay.
I don't know what that means exactly. I think it's a good movie. I think it's well-paced.
Yeah.
I think it's very watchable. There was something very charming about the fact that we were watching, like, I was like, oh, black and white. Like, I was just expecting them all to be of color.
Oh, it looks amazing,
right? It looks great.
Some of the compositions are insane.
Everything about this is really good, and I was just like, oh. And, like, this is, like, I think a really great way to start off. I just think that it's interesting that we're basically not starting with an Elvis movie, because, like, the part he was supposed to play, when they had Elvis, they added lines, they added the songs. Like, we need to make this big. But I think, all things considered, like, not knowing what this project is going to be, this is a good place to start.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, if this character wasn't always this meaty, I'm kind of wondering now, is did they even add the whole thing where he married the girl? You know what I'm saying? Like, it almost feels like maybe that's where they added and constructed, like, an extra plot point. Maybe the brothers were just supposed to come home and hide the money and that whole thing, and they added this whole stuff with the brother and the girlfriend and the marriage.
Because there is stuff toward the end when, like, she knows where the money is in the stables or whatever, and she goes in there to get it, and there's the Union soldier, and he's just like, I can't let you out without searching. She's like, okay, search me.
Yeah.
And, like, that whole works even without Elvis, right?
Right.
And then,
yeah.
Because she's a woman, like, he's like, all right, whatever.
It seems a little like maybe that's sort of the expansion there. So
when this movie played in theaters, every time Elvis said a line, every girl in the crowd was screaming, and no one could hear what was being said. Elvis told his friend Cliff Gleaves that he was so embarrassed by this, and it prevented him, he felt, from becoming a serious actor, being considered a serious actor, because like, he was just like the sex object, which is a bummer, because when you watch this, when you watch his like enthusiasm and then his anger, like you were saying, there's something here to him. I mean, if he's not Elvis, he's not in this movie. I mean, maybe he is, but he's in this movie, he's in this part, like the part is this because he's Elvis. But if he's not Elvis, if he's just an actor, this could be the start of something amazing.
Right. Like, because I feel like if he's not Elvis, he probably would have been the one of the other brothers who has like two lines, right? And that's probably what the part was before he came along, and they found an opportunity to sort of like expand it and stuff. But you're right, you're totally right. Like, I think he's got the chops. Like, I think he's just multi-talented is what it comes down to. And I do feel that the rest of his movies are going to be tailored to him,
like stunty and gimmicky.
Yeah, like an Elvis, like you said, like this isn't an Elvis movie. I don't think we're gonna get another one of these. Like, I think from now on it's all gonna be tailor-made for
Elvis,
the
fact
which I think might not be the best thing. Like, I want more things where he's just like we talk about now, how it's great when Cage just does like
or
Keanu just comes on and does like two scenes or something. We're never gonna get that again.
Like, the fact that we have a movie at all that's not an Elvis movie, I was like, oh, this is not what I expected at all. Like, I expected everything to be like because we talked about it in the thing in the intro in the zero episode zero. I sort of pictured all of these, and this is, but it's not as much a way to sell the soundtrack.
Yes,
it's like we need to make money on the music, so we're gonna frame a movie around it, and like you were saying, give people a way to see Elvis.
Yeah.
And then on the way home from the theater, stop at the record shop, get the 45 or whatever.
I think by the end of this run, we're going to realize like we're watching the record. Like, we're literally, the movie isn't, it's not even, like, it's going to be a whole other beast. Like,
because what's weird about this, and I really want to, like, that's what I'm most curious about, how forced in whatever regard the songs are to the narrative, because this movie, you take all four songs out, it's fine.
Yeah.
They don't add anything.
And you might even have someone else playing those songs at the state fair or whatever they were at. Like, those felt totally fine and baked in and organic. It was just like, you know, hanging out on the porch where it got very awkward.
Oh, yeah, they're at dinner. They pray, fade to black, come back from the fade. They're on the porch, and he's just got a guitar in his hands. Like, okay. This movie was originally going to be a B movie, like just like a low budget, just a quick, dirty, whatever.
Yeah.
Then they add Elvis. They're like, okay, cool. We're gonna bump the budget up to $1 million. Now that he's here, we're gonna make it like a real like.
Because I've like I was telling you, man, like this plot is like a very B Western. Like, I've seen B Westerns mm-hmm. just like this. Yeah.
It made $1 million back on its opening weekend. It was the second biggest movie that weekend behind James Dean's Giant.
Wow.
Just this past week, they announced that there's going to be a fourth James Dean movie. Oh, did you see this?
I heard from
They're
Zelda
bringing
Williams
him back
on
with
Twitter.
CGI.
Yeah.
Like, Elvis can't be far behind, right?
Well, here's the difference. No one wants more Elvis movies, apparently. Like, but no, Elvis was in Blade Runner 2049, was it? Like, Tupac performed. Like, I watched the Tales from the Crypt from the 90s where they brought Humphrey Bogart back for an episode. Like, this is nothing new. Like, this, I'm shocked there hasn't been more of this, you know? I mean, how is this any different?
But they've never constructed an entire movie around a dead person, though.
But how is this different than Paul Walker coming back for another?
Because it's not about him. He's just a part of the story. If James Dean is in a movie, but if it's a James Dean movie, like if he's the
star. You know why that's an issue? Because so far we've only had fully CGI co-stars. They've never been, you know, like
or
even
shots.
Alita Battle Angel, right? Like,
yes.
That's about the closest that a CGI character has come to running the whole show.
Oh, James Dean and Alita Battle Angel too.
What worked for Alita is she's in a world of Alitas, you know, like everyone's fucked up and weird looking in that. And this is just going to be CGI looking James Dean. Is he going to be in like his 30s? Like that? Are they going to age him? Like there's too much.
What I feel is like weird about the timing is the technology is obviously better than it's ever been and it's crazy good.
Yeah.
The uncanny valley still exists.
Yes.
You're still going to be able to tell. I mean, you're going to know it's a CGI James Dean.
That's always going to be gnawing at you.
You're also going to be able to tell.
Yes. The mouth.
We just talked about on Too Fast, Too Forever. There's news, quote-unquote news, that Paul Walker's coming, that Brian O'Connor's coming back for Fast 9. We're talking about whether that's real or not. It's going to be his brother Cody. Paul Walker's brother Cody might take his place, and they might do the CGI. Because even in Furious 7, there's a handful of scenes that are just
Which are incredible. Right? Which I didn't know were fake Paul Walker scenes until just recently. I was like, I can't believe that scene. Like, when he's putting his son in the car, I had no idea that was...
Because you probably watched... We were mentioning, I think, on the Primal episode of Cage Club that you were saying that you have been watching CGI videos, and there's one breakdown of, like, good and bad CGI, and they say that, like, Furious 7...
is the best.
At least as of, you know, a year or two ago, whatever, was the best in terms of, like, the facial... in terms of all that, like, by far.
So here's what you need to do that well is a lookalike, right? So, like, if you were gonna do James Dean, you need to find an actor who
James Franco.
Dude, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, you gotta do it like that, and then you gotta paste the performance over the performance. Like, you can't just build it from ground up, because there's nothing to reference. You need the reference.
So what we were just talking about on Too Fast, Too Forever, when we talked about the Cody Walker replacing Paul as Brian.
So good.
In the movie The Congress, which is the Robin Wright movie. Do you know The Congress?
Yes, yes.
So she sells her likeness and they just start making movies without her. But that's like set in the future where like that just exists.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is more kind of believable. Plus in The Congress, like the movies that they're making.
The character's still alive in real life too. Yeah.
As they make the movie and the movies that they're making, they're actually having Robin Wright play. It's not like it's a CGI. It's just the idea of that. And I think that that's a fascinating thing. Like, does James Dean's estate get money from this? Who owns the rights to James Dean's likeness?
Right.
If they remake...
Does the studio
in Elvis Presley... Like, who owns the rights to his stuff? Did Michael Jackson buy it? Or is that...
No,
am I conflating things?
I don't know. I think Elvis's stuff is in the family.
Priscilla?
Now.
Like, so Riley Keough gets... So Riley Keough gets a cut of
maybe
an Elvis CGI
like,
movie?
Imagine...
I want a Riley Keough Elvis movie.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
And not only that, but Priscilla's a great actress. She should come back.
Speaking of Priscilla Presley, she reportedly copied Deborah Padgett's hair in this movie.
No way.
Elvis had a crush on Deborah Padgett because she was seeing Howard Hughes. She's like, I don't have time for you, Elvis. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
But Priscilla Presley, because she's got this like gorgeous like poof in the front, like this like the hair down the back. And so Priscilla's like, oh, give me that hair. And that's apparently, reportedly, the story goes, how she wooed Elvis.
Wow.
Because she had her hair. I mean, plus she's Priscilla Presley, but like, or Priscilla whatever. Also, I don't know anything about it. I don't know her maiden name, and I'm so sorry. But she copied the hair to attract Elvis 3 years later. So I guess like he still like had this like proverbial hard-on for Deborah Padgett 3 years later.
Wow.
And Priscilla was like, hey, check it out.
You want it, you got it.
One of my favorite podcasters is Matt Gorley. He's on Super Ego, Pistol Shrimps. He also did I Was There Too. And the kind of the through line of I Was There Too, which is a fantastic podcast, was he was obsessed with squibs.
Oh, right, right.
When he was in Brooklyn to do a Super Ego Live, he went to a place that squibbed him, and they filmed it, and so he got squibbed. Like, his dream was to get squibbed,
nice.
And he got squibbed. This movie, Love Me Tender, is also, apparently, the first time a guy was ever squibbed in a movie.
Get out of town. Was it Elvis?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Because Elvis shoots his brother in the shoulder, so maybe it was the guy he shot.
Maybe. Elvis's real-life backup band musicians Scotty Moore, Bill Black, and DJ Fontana were not allowed to play roles in this movie.
They weren't
because
the
producers said that they didn't look like country musicians.
Elvis is literally from, like, where this movie takes place. Like, you know, like, he's from around the corner of where the Reno brothers actually grew up.
Yeah. The song Love Me Tender is apparently taken from a Civil War ballad, Aurelie, A-U-R-E,
oh, okay.
L-E-A. The song was first on screen in the 1936 film Come and Get It, then adopted almost from the beginning as the school song, quote-unquote school song, of West Point.
Oh,
so
really?
It's been like this whole historical... After the movie, Robert D. Webb, the director of this, offered Elvis the starring role in his next movie, The Weight of the Gold, but 20th Century Fox refused to pay. He and Colonel Tom Parker asked for $250,000 plus half the box office return.
You gotta be crazy.
They offered him $150,000 plus half the box office.
Whoa.
So they just wouldn't shell out the other extra $100,000, and then he walked.
Whoa.
20th Century Fox
turned out okay.
Would come to regret not having negotiated a multi-picture contract with Elvis when he signed for this film. He'd go on to become one of the most popular movie icons of the period, placing among the top 10 box office stars 7 times in the decade after Love Me Tender. But only of his 31 movies, Fox would only make 3 of them.
That's crazy.
Right? Taglines for the movie, and then we're going to talk about it. It's Mr. Rock and Roll in the story he was born to play.
I don't agree with that. I mean, he is Mr. Rock and Roll, but...
This is not his story.
If anything, you know, the only other Elvis movie I've ever seen is Jailhouse Rock, and that plays a lot closer to that tagline.
I love that this posits the role he was born to play... is second fiddle. Like, the most famous musician of all time is like, yeah, get in the background.
Know, number 2.
Tagline number 2. Hear Elvis sing, ... Love Me Tender, We're Gonna Move, Poor Boy, Let Me.
Oh, that's just the track list.
Number 3. Mr. Rock and Roll! Exclamation point. He's a singing man, a fighting man, a loving man, in the story he was born to play.
Okay, well, first of all, he doesn't fight anyone.
His wife.
Oh, he beats up a woman.
He also shoots his brother, or he shoots at a guy.
He shot his brother in the arm. This is not the role he was born to play.
And then number 4, bringing it all together, you'll love him tender in the story he was born to play.
Oh my God, that's my favorite. I love that one's the best.
So this movie is I was excited because it has an introducing Elvis Presley.
That's right.
By the way, not an introduction.
I know, everyone knew who he was already. That makes no sense.
Hey, in case you're wondering who the new guy is.
Look at this kid we just found on the street.
Elvis Presley. Heard of him? Yeah.
A little bit.
What I really loved about this movie is that there's like the overlude, the score, like throughout the entire thing.
It's
Love Me Tender.
Yeah, I love when movies do that.
You love it tender?
I love it tenderly. No, but when movies use like a popular song and then infuse it into like the score of the film and you hear different variations of it and stuff.
There's a scene in this movie after Vance comes back and they're at the dining room table and they're like, I think mom's cooking, and Elvis has a saber in his hand.
Yeah.
And he's going, wah, wah, wah.
I mean, he's so juvenile. Like, he's such a little kid for parts of this movie. Yeah, I was watching it with Andrea, and she's like, why does he have a sword? I was like, it's a Confederate saber. Like,
and he's Elvis.
But it's like, it's like playing with your brother's, like, toy. He's like, God, I love your sword, bro.
Let's talk about the songs. There's 4 songs. It's 4 songs over 2 scenes.
Yeah.
2 songs back-to-back in each scene. Like, he just basically, one song stops. He doesn't even say thank you. He just goes to another song.
Doesn't say thank you very much. Doesn't say
so, that. Song number 1... We're gonna move.
Yep.
Because this old house, it has a lid.
Good song.
So what's interesting about the songs, there's 3 that basically are of a type.
Yes.
It's like kind of country, kind of like real quick.
Boppy, yeah.
And then there's Love Me Tender.
And then there's the Love Me Tender ballad, yes.
It fits the movie.
Yeah.
I think it fits the score. I think it's nice at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you listen to the 4 songs, like when we like got lunch and we listened to the 4 songs like 4 times back and forth or whatever, it is wildly out of place.
It is very out of place. I agree.
That song is the reason this movie is
this
movie.
What's even crazier is that you mentioned earlier the song has roots in...
The Civil War.
The Civil War time, too. So like it's the one most fitting... And yet it feels sort of like the most jarringly out of place for me. Like, it's not that it's a bad song, but out of them, it's my least favorite song in the movie.
Well, what's also weird is that he sings We're Gonna Move, and people are just having a good time on the porch, right?
Yeah.
They're just like, you know, after he sings the 2 songs, it's like, just like we used to when he, you know, we had the guitar and we just sang after dinner. It's like,
yeah.
He sings that song, which is cool. And then he sings Love Me Tender to his mom?
To his brother?
And I wrote down that everyone's feeling some kind of way about this. Like, they're all, like, this song is making them all consider everything.
The girl is very unhappy during this whole, they see pictures, shots of her, and she is not having this.
Well, the thing about her is that, so Vance comes back, and he's like, Mama, I'm home, and Mom is overjoyed.
Because they thought he was dead.
Right, she is like,
she's like, I got four sons again.
The boys are back. And then Kathy comes out, and she's like,
oh, no. And she's got that look for the whole movie.
And Elvis comes up, and Elvis just like, hey, Vance, good to see you.
Yeah.
Kathy looks beautiful. He's like, oh, yeah, she does. And then he picks Kathy up. He's like, let's go inside, and like, let's
and
go do this.
And then Elvis is like, hey, something I gotta tell you.
put her down.
Before you go bang my wife.
So we're married. And Vance is like, okay.
He's like, he's like, yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, okay. So Kathy, I feel like she has a lot to do with this movie.
But
I think she is remarkable. She is so conflicted because she basically loves these two men.
Yeah.
It felt like she was always going to carry a candle for Vance. She might never love Elvis as much as Clint as much as Vance.
Right.
But Vance died.
Yeah, but he's dead.
Clint's here. Clint's a great guy. He's Elvis.
He's Elvis.
How do you not love Elvis? And then Vance comes back. And it's like, uh-oh. And so a lot of the movie, she is like very, physically looks anguished.
Yes, yes.
And it's great.
She's playing it perfectly. Everyone else is out of their mind in this movie, though. Like,
man, oh man. Elvis sings Love Me Tender. No one else in this movie sings. It's just Elvis.
Yeah.
Sings Love Me Tender, and then the scene just kind of ends.
It just kind of fades out.
That's when Kathy and Vance want to have a talk. They're like, We this can't.
Yeah, there's a lot. Like, it becomes like a very soap opera for the middle of the second act. It's like all that up until the
because Elvis doesn't jump for like 25 minutes in. Like, he's basically the break in the two.
Yeah,
like the first chunk of the movie is Vance and his boys.
Yeah, robbing and stealing and trying to get back home.
Rhyming and stealing. But then Kathy is like, "This can't." Like, basically, you know that we still love each other. I'm married to your brother.
Yeah,
and Vance is like,
done.
"All right, I'm gonna leave. That's fine. Like, I get it. I can't be here. I'm gonna go." And then it all kind of breaks bad from there.
Pretty much, yeah. Because then that's when the other guy, the Yankees, show up looking for their money, and then his gang shows up looking for the rest of their money, and everyone gets greedy and wants the money, and then Vance just wants to turn it all in and go away and just fix everything. And yeah, it becomes a real dramatic second act. It gets real heavy and stuff. And then we get the train robbery, where not robbery, but like they break them out of the train, and the third, that breaks it into the third act where it gets,
well, before that we have the schoolhouse scene, and I feel like,
oh yeah, that's the county fair.
I feel like there is the opportunity, and it's not the way that the movie goes, for him to sort of like funnel or launder the stolen money into the schoolhouse, because it's like the schoolhouse needs money. He's got a bunch of money that he doesn't really want anymore. Now he knows that it's like, it's not his.
Because they talked about just giving it to the Confederacy, and then they find out that there is no
Confederacy.
Yeah,
there's no Confederacy. Yeah. And that's why they're like, oh, like, we should just... Because, well, like, when they have it, they're like, we'll give 10 grand to the Confederacy, seven of us will split the $2,500. And then they're like, yeah, maybe. And then they find out there's no Confederacy, and then they're
and
just
then
suddenly
like, okay,
like, all like set for life.
Yeah.
I actually wonder...
how much that would be?
It's gotta be millions of dollars. Oh.
Okay.
It's like 200 grand.
Okay. It's still good.
It's a lot of money, but I thought it was going to be like retirement money. It's not. Yeah, it's not that. That feels wrong, but apparently...
Well, it's funny when Vance hands the guy a 20 for that suit, and he's like, I haven't seen a 20 like
since
this
1863.
Since before the war. Like, it's like, God damn.
So on stage, he sings Let Me, and then he sings Poor Boy.
Which is...
an all-timer.
That's the hit. This song is great.
And those are back-to-back on stage. I just wrote, I'm laughing every time he poses. Like,
because he's bopping and he's doing the move like, you know, you hear about, and you've probably seen footage of him, you know, on the Ed Sullivan Show or whatever, when, you know, the classic Elvis hip shake thing. But to see it like this, like...
in context?
No, I think so, right? So, like, this is what he would have done when you went to see him.
Yeah.
This is how he performs, and he just does the Elvis dance. It's all I could call it. I don't know what else to call it, except for the Elvis dance. It's like how Michael Jackson just does his thing. Like, it's magic. I don't know what to do. Yeah. I'm, like, in awe of it.
There's always, like, the, if you could go back in time for any one concert or whatever, like, what would you... this has got to be... like, it's just, like any one of his shows, where it's just... people losing their minds, like, even like in the theater watching this movie, just being there and like being around people like physically unable to control themselves.
I know. I'm trying to think when the last time that happened to me.
Well, so like the only thing I can think of is that when the Draft House showed Magic Mike and XXL, they had the rowdy screenings because the Draft House is very strict, like no talking, no texting. But they had explicitly rowdy screenings so that if you were a woman who wanted to shout at Channing Tatum,
you could do that.
You could do that. And I feel like that's kind of the closest thing. Like there's still like sex symbols and stuff like that, but like not to this extent. Like this is crazy.
This is insane. This is madness.
Elvis pulls a gun on, like, when the bad guys show up to the house, Elvis pulls a gun. He's like, I'm going with you. It's just...
Well, it's so crazy how quickly he flips, like, you know, they're able to persuade him and be like, turn him evil. And
I think he's just, he just wants to do something.
Yeah, he's just really naive.
I feel like that's something that's not touched on here, is that I think he just feels kind of, like, stunted.
He was left out of the war. He's left out of the robbery. He's left out of everything, basically.
He's left out of being a man, kind of, right? You know, I know that it's a different time, but he's still, like, living with his mom, and he's, like, you know, married to... Like, it's not even, like... It's the woman that he loves, but it's, like, it's always kind of also going to be his brother's...
And it also feels like... I don't want to say Elvis kind of feels like her pet, but she kind of... It kind of feels like Elvis is, like, not necessarily,
like... A little puppy.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like she loves Elvis. It just seems like she's with him. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, at that time, a woman had to be with a man.
Yeah.
Like, especially during the 1800s, I would assume. So it was just like, well, I've got a great setup here. I should probably stick with Elvis as opposed to try and find something new out there.
Yep. And I think what's really difficult is that Elvis is essentially living his brother's life, right?
Yeah.
He's doing the work that his brother probably would be doing around the farm.
Mm-hmm.
He's married to the woman that his brother would have married.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking care of his mother the way that his brother would have taken care. He's probably happy. We don't really go too far into Elvis's psyche, I don't think, in this movie.
No, but I mean, when we see him, but he seems happy. Yeah.
He's probably wonders maybe if he could have done more. And then Vance comes back, and now the life that he's been living, that guy's back now. It's like, well, where do I
claim his life?
Right?
Yeah. That's tough.
And so I think that's why he's so eager to prove himself, because he wants to establish a place in this world in which he can exist.
I like that.
Right?
Yeah.
At the end, after Elvis gets shot, Vance tells him everything's going to be all right. Elvis says, everything's going to be all right.
And then he dies.
He dies.
I love that.
Clinton Reno, born January 14th, 1843, dies April 25th, 1865, and then sings Love Me Tonight.
So I thought it was really interesting that Elvis, in a Western, in his first movie, his name is Clint.
Who?
Because there's an actor very famous.
Who?
Known for being in Westerns with the first name Clint.
Clint
Howard.
Oh, yeah, Opie.
Clint Eastwood. So I was thinking of Clint Eastwood the whole time, and then I had another Back to the Future 3 reference for everyone. That's what Marty calls himself when he goes back to the 1800s. He calls himself Mr. Eastwood.
I'm just letting you know right now in episode 1, I am never going to know Elvis's name. He's going to be Elvis in every single movie.
Well, like, that's the only reason, because I have Clint and it's a Western.
I wrote down Clint, but like at one point I wrote Clint and then I put in parentheses Elvis. And I was like, I'm not going to remember who Clint is.
Oh, there was a real Beverly Hillbillies moment when they put Mama in her chair on the back of the wagon to bring her to the fair.
And then Elvis is like, you two ladies look so beautiful. Like, I'm going to have to keep an eye out for both of you today.
It's like, dude, one of those is your mom.
One thing I do want to talk about when we talk about Elvis getting angry.
Okay.
I don't know if this is good. It feels not good, but it feels genuine. When he's angry, before he gets pushy and chubby with Kathy, he starts talking so fast. Did you notice that? His, like, angry chatter is, like, almost unintelligible.
Yeah.
Because he's got that...
Because he's like, what do you mean by fans and money and all that and mom and daddy? Like, he just strolls out of his mouth.
Because I think this takes place in Texas?
Yeah, they do go back to Texas. But it doesn't start there. I think it started in Louisiana.
Okay. Because Elvis is from Memphis.
Yes.
And he's got that southern twang. And so it fits here. But then it's almost like he's kind of sort of a little bit merging both his natural language with kind of the accent for the film, but then, or like kind of like maybe trying to dial it back a little bit, and then he gets angry, or the character gets angry, and it kind of like he drops the pretense, and he just like, it gets a little bit heavier, thicker accent, and he's also speaking very quickly.
Yeah.
It's scary.
So what I found from his performance, he's doing a very sort of modern day southern accent Elvis kind of thing. Like, it almost feels like he's toning it down to me, like trying to speak more clearly and things like that. And then by the end of the movie, it's like he's dropped all of that and he's gone full country and he's not trying to be proper or anything.
And I think that's
and it's happening.
Choice, right?
Yeah. And I think the anger like releases that. His character seriously just flips a switch and becomes a completely different person. And like, in a good way, like, in a way that's believable and stuff. Yep. And that was one of those character traits about it, was his voice that changed.
He says, like, after the guys are like, he's like, where's Kathy? And they're like, oh, Kathy and Vance ran off with the money. And he's like, I always knew it. This just showed me. It's like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Like, he's been like, living with the resentment.
Dark thoughts, yeah.
But there's also been, like, 4 days, maybe? Like, it's not a long time. But maybe...
But she's been on his mind for a long time.
I guess maybe he always knew it, like, you know, she always loved Vance. I'm always number two.
And this day could, like, you know, even though they were told the brother's dead, you'd never know, like, this day could have come. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. In the back of your head, you're always thinking the worst and, like, uh-oh, it's gotten to be the worst.
When the movie ends, do Vance and Kathy get married? Oh. 100%, right?
Oh, yeah. They're 100%. Together. Yeah, absolutely.
Or do you think he dies from the bullet wound?
No. He would have died. I think he would have died. I think the idea here is...
Oh, because that's probably a couple days later when they bury him or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, right? And I thought there was a kind of, like, I don't want to say nice symmetry, but there's a weird literary symmetry here going on where at the beginning of the movie, the three brothers were thought to be dead.
Yeah.
And at the end of the, and they come back. And at the end, the one who's alive ends up dying.
There's also a nice parallel symmetry here in between Elvis replaces Vance, and now Vance replaces Elvis.
Yes. There's some stuff going on here, man. And the compositions in this movie are beautiful. Like, yeah. It's shot in 2x3. It's, you know, the really thin letterbox. It's black and white. Like, there's one shot where there's all seven gang members in a shot, and it just looks so amazing. And it's just like their heads. It's just like, I don't know. It just looks so good.
Since we bought all these DVDs, I think they, because even like when I bought them and then you bought them like a couple months later, I think they all like rocketed in value.
Yeah, they did.
I bought this, in case you want to, like, so when I bought this, I got all 30 movies for probably like
$50.
Yeah. Because they're rarely standalone. They're all like in collections. So if you want to buy this one, what I have it on is the Elvis 75th Birthday Collection, which is 7 movies, including Love Me Tender.
Nice. So I didn't have the opportunity to get them like that. I have a bunch of singles, but I also have a bunch of like... You know,
45?
Has like four and 12 inches and some 12-inch records. But I have some like 4-packs, so like there'll be 4 on a disc,
yeah,
or 5 on a disc,
too,
or
yeah,
things like that too. So yeah, but yeah, there's something about the Elvis movies where they're out of print at the moment, and they go out of print every couple of years. They release them, and then they go like crazy.
The Disney Vault.
But it's crazy, like that. Like Godzilla films are like that too. Even though Criterion just re-released a whole bunch of them, they don't have English dubs. Like the old, hold on to your old discs is basically the moral to this.
So we have to do 2 more things.
Okay.
We need to guess the next movie.
Okay.
And we also have to give this movie some awards, because okay, we decided. So if you listen to other podcasts of ours, the way that we do it is that we sort of, you know, best role, worst role, best film, worst film.
Okay, a whole slew of
nominate
awards.
Things for Tom Hanks movies, for Tom Cruise movies, for Nicolas Cage movies, whatever.
I think one thing we got to do is best song, because I bet we're going to get more than one song per movie, you know? So, like, we got to pick a song maybe for film.
Okay, so each film we could do our favorite song. I feel like these are going to be so different.
Yeah.
And different from everything we do, but like maybe, but like, similar to each other.
I also I don't know. I feel like episode to episode, they're going to be weirder and different too.
But like, I kind of don't want to.
No, we don't want to have like an award show at the end. Like, we're just going to give them like award them something on the episode.
Okay. So, best song.
Poor Boy,
Poor
right?
Boy.
Yeah. I love that song.
What else about this movie stands out? Like, what do you think? Like, when you think about this movie, like, if you, you know, in a year, 2 years, whatever, when we're still doing this project, because it's going to take forever, what about this is going to stand out? Best hair.
I mean, everyone's hair. I think her hair is better than Elvis's hair in this movie. She's gorgeous. I didn't know she was with Hughes at the time. That makes perfect sense.
Written by Robert Buckner and Morris Garratty.
Oh, we got to keep an eye on the directors at some point, because one guy's going to end up directing like almost all of these.
I looked at a bunch of these, and I think basically everybody who was involved in the making of, not necessarily the actors, but everybody involved in the making of, never worked with Elvis again. And this feels like a lot of them, like this is the most popular, most seen thing that they've ever done. Not saying that that's, because I mean, this is a very popular movie.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is right up at the beginning when they rob the station and shoot the station agent and all that kind of thing. Like, I just love the idea that the war is over and people don't know, because, you know, how are you going to know? Like, how are you going to know unless someone tells you, right?
So, well, like, there's like the islands where people still think that like the Vietnam War is
exactly
going on.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of with this kind of thing. Or like, you would get that in Japan on some of those secluded islands, right, with World War II. They'd say they'd run into people who still thought the war was on and everything. So I love that idea. I like that they started off playing with that. I'm pretty sure this same movie was made with Roy Orbison as the fastest guitar in the West, where like a bunch of them just like, they don't know the war is over, so they steal all this money from the North, and then they go South, and but I think they end up working at like a
fastest guitar alive.
Fastest guitar alive.
The South is losing the Civil War, and the coffers are nearly empty. A group of Confederate spies steals a shipment of gold in San Francisco and attempts to deliver to the Confederate general in El Paso. Others know about the gold and seek to steal it from them, but the spies have a secret weapon, a guitar that shoots bullets. Holy moly.
Yeah, headed by Roy Orbison himself. Yeah. So it's kind of like an El Mariachi thing going on in there, too.
Wonderful.
With the guitar. Django with the guitar weapon thing.
I don't know if we're going to be able to really... I think this is, again, something we're going to learn. Mm-hmm. On a scale of 1 to 10, mm-hmm. where 1 is makes perfect sense for there to be music in the movie, 10
okay.
is...
Yeah. No
this
sense.
Movie could 100% exist. Like, they basically don't even acknowledge.
Right.
Like, I don't know if we're ever going to have a 10, but we might have a 10. Where would you rank this one? It's got to be close to a 10.
Here's what does it. The porch is completely out of question,
yeah, yeah,
out
yeah.
of nowhere. Automatic 5 for the porch
okay.
being super
so
bad.
So scale of 1 to 5, yeah, yeah.
It's automatically a 5. But what saves it from going any lower are the other two songs being performed at like a state fair kind of situation. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're very, not the tone of this. The songs are wildly out of date. I'm not saying that. But you would go to raise money for the courthouse or the, you know, clock tower or the schoolhouse, and there'd be a band playing
it
and
does,
a guy singing.
It does feel like in a modern day movie, the scene of the fair would open on the band, they would play a note, and then the camera would pan away. But here, it just stays on the band for 5 minutes
yeah.
because it's Elvis, right? So, 5 or 6? Let's say six,
yeah.
Okay.
I just don't want to go any lower than 5.
Anything else about this movie that we want to nominate, good or bad?
I mean, I honestly don't know if we're going to see a better shot Elvis film because just,
beautiful.
It's shot like a classic movie. Like,
yeah.
I feel like most movies just look this good back then and without even trying too hard, but that's the thing, like, even if you're not into it, like, you could appreciate the craft of this movie. It's really well put together.
Before we guess the next movie,
mm.
I was looking at Elvis's IMDb. You know, have like the top four, like what they're most known for. I was thinking, is this in there, because this is his first movie?
Jailhouse Rock.
No
I
don't. This is
Viva Las Vegas.
No, the number one movie I have
Harum Scarum?
Never heard of. No. One of these is huge.
Okay.
What's maybe the biggest movie that you have not said yet? Also, this is making you guess things that maybe you don't even know
like
are movies.
King Creole is my favorite song. That's
nope.
the movie. Wait, what's the other Army movie? There's an Army movie. Just lay it on me.
So number four is G.I. Blues.
G.I. Blues. There's the Army one.
Number three is the other big one that you didn't say, Blue Hawaii.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Isn't that the one that Cage talks about in Honeymoon in Vegas?
Oh, boy, look at this picture. That's beautiful. Number two. Girls, Girls, Girls.
Okay.
Number one, a movie I've never heard of. Number 18 on our list, Tickle Me?
What?
The That's thing
on our list?
I
don't even
known for.
I can't even.
Tickle Me.
I bought that a movie called Tickle Me?
I got it in the 4 film favorites Elvis Presley musicals.
Dude, that's insane. How isn't he more well known for. How isn't like the comeback special on there or the Hawaiian special on there or something? Like, that's wild.
Couldn't tell you, my man. The next movie we're doing, 1957, 1 year later, going from Love Me Tender to Loving You.
Oh, I
so love me.
It.
Love you. What do you think, Loving You, a movie that it's the only one of these that I own on VHS, because I think this is the expensive one.
Oh, I just, okay, so I have a Region 2 copy of this
yes.
I got for like $6.
What do you think Loving You is about?
This is so, like, it's impossible to tell from
oh,
the
yeah.
title. Do you think they called it Loving You because it's so close to Love Me Tender? Like, that's how it feels. It's like, we need to stick along the same lines of the title. I'm going to sort of do a little reversal of Love Me Tender. I'm going to say Elvis
yep.
was supposed to marry someone, gets into an accident, falls into like a coma, and goes to the hospital, comes out of the coma to like get back to his life and finds out the girl he's in love with married someone else. Maybe his younger brother? I doubt they'll do that 2 movies in a row. But I think it might be something like that. Like maybe Elvis...
On the other side of the coin.
We're still in the era of those old movies where you would get like one of those dramas about like a guy, a fish out of water in his own life. Like he was in an accident, he comes out of a coma and he has to like rediscover who he is kind of thing.
Okay. So Loving You.
As good a guess as any. And he has to learn to love himself.
Motorcycle movie. I'm going to say it's going to be Romeo and Juliet.
Okay.
Maybe not a straight adaptation, but it's a forbidden love.
Okay.
And he's going to sing the titular song, Loving You, which I do not know, from the ground to a girl in her window.
Oh, nice. Serenade.
It's the story of how he's, maybe it's like a wrong side of the tracks. He's a poor boy.
Poor boy. Poor boy.
And she's like a wealthy woman or wealthy family, you know, wealthy girl in a wealthy family. The dad doesn't want it. And eventually... he breaks down the dad's resistance because he's Elvis.
That sounds a lot more believable than my guess, but
so okay.
Mine
so,
was more like a Steven Seagal movie.
Here's a couple things. Love Me Tender has a 6.2 on IMDb, which is not bad.
Okay. Solid.
On Letterboxd is a 2.9, which again
that's a little low. I gave it 3 this time.
The write up, Elvis Presley's with a T in it. Elvis Presley's first film is a Civil War drama. complete yep. write-up.
Totally true, though. Actually, the war's over, so it should be post-Civil War.
I'm trying to gauge where these fit, right? So Love Me Tender has been seen by 858 people on Letterboxd.
That's
not
it?
A ton.
Wow.
I don't think a lot of people have seen, like, I don't think the Letterboxd crowd and the Elvis crowd really overstepped.
I don't know, because the Letterboxd crowd cannot be defined. Like, it's
they're all high school girls. They're all high school girls. They're, like, genuinely, like, the most popular accounts. This is not
really?
This is not me making exaggerations.
Okay.
They're all, like, queer high school girls who, like, found their place. Like, they, it's a very young, gay...
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like we're a very specific subsect of Tumblr became Letterboxd.
I think my issue is then that the only people I follow on Letterboxd are like cinephiles. You know what I'm saying? And that's why
well,
I was
that
like,
also
what?
Exists. Yeah.
No, but I mean, if they're outnumbered, then I have no idea what's happening.
Because if you look
site.
At like the most popular, like a lot of the most popular accounts are all like 17, 18, 19-year-old okay. kids who are
So you're saying create a fake account as a 19-year-old for my Letterboxd profile and I'll get more traffic. No, I'm not
Never
actually
going
to do that.
Never said that.
You winked when
so
I said
So Loving
that.
You, 6.5 on IMDb, a little bit higher.
Okay.
3.1
okay.
on Letterboxd, a little
We're
bit higher.
Up.
A musician and publicist help a delivery man
Whoa.
Achieve stardom.
Way off.
Elvis Presley, Elizabeth Scott, directed by Hal Cantor. It's also crazy to think, like, basically, everyone in all these movies is dead.
That was not where I thought you were going to go with that, but yeah.
In front of and behind the camera.
Uh-huh. On all sides of the spectrum.
I mean, some of them died recently.
Dead. All right. And on that note.
Look at this production. Like, that, I am looking forward to this.
Oh, that looks nice. Yeah.
He's got to kiss a woman in every movie, right?
Did he kiss anyone in this movie? Did we see him? I know he hit her.
Has Florence and the Machine saying a kiss with a fist is better than none? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I mean, clearly, in that production image, he kisses a girl in the next movie.
I'm not against ever watching this one again, though. I'll say that much. Like,
yeah.
This is not a movie that I'm just going to, like, throw on the shelf and forget about. Like, this is actually a pretty good Western. It's all right. This is, like, entry-level Western.
That's all
Western.
Right, Mama.
That's all right, Mama. This is, like, entry-level Western, though. Like, it doesn't have, like, great action or like, huge stars, which would later on, like, really elevate Westerns the most is, like, the action sequences and, like, the people playing. But, like, story-wise, this is very typical. This is very typical
It's got
Western.
Horses. The motorcycles of the Old West.
But it's, you know, it's right around, like, most of the best Westerns that I like happened right around the end of the Civil War, before the turn of the century, where it's, like, that gray zone where everyone was trying to, like, re-figure out, like, what's the country now? What's, you know? Like, mountain men were coming down from the hills and, like...
So this is right in your sweet spot.
Yeah, as far as, like, the type
timeline.
Yeah, the timeline, yeah.
Well, we'll be back... At the very latest, in a month, because there's a new Nicolas Cage movie coming out, Grand Isle.
And then maybe even the latest after that, a month, because...
Oh, yeah, I think... So what I'm thinking now for Cage Club is that even when there's a movie in theaters, I think we need to do an episode, like especially for Cage, we can't wait.
No.
I mean, Color Out of Space we're already behind on because it's already been out in festivals
true,
and stuff.
True.
But I think when Color Out of Space comes out, we need to go to the theater together, see the movie, go back,
do
an Elvis... Put them both out.
I agree.
At the very latest, there'll be one more episode, or at least very least one more episode this year. Actually, probably two, because we talked about in the episode zero, I'll come up to do the two or three movies in a day.
Oh, right. We're going
to
go.
We've got a Hanks or a Cruise movie to record.
That's right.
And so we'll do an Elvis then. So there's going to be a couple more this year, which I think we are rocketing through it at a pace that I was not expecting.
Yeah, we are definitely ahead of schedule as far as I thought we'd be right now with Elvis movies.
For all 26 shows in the Cage Club podcast network, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us king at cageclub.me. Let us know what you thought of Love Me Tender. What's your favorite song? It better be Poor Boy. Just subject line, Poor Boy.
Poor Boy. Poor Boy.
Come back in probably a month or so. Just, I mean, basically, stay subscribed.
Yeah, just stay subscribed. We'll be back.
It's like a random gift.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
That hopefully you like.
Nice little treat that'll show up once in a while.
Loving You coming in December.
Yep.
If not before. I don't know.
We'll see.
Off to a good start, I think.
I do too.
I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we'll see you next time for Loving You right here on Viva Pod Vegas.
Well, thank you very much.
They call me Poor Boy, Poor Boy, Poor Boy. But I ain't lonesome and I ain't blue. 'Cause I could never be a poor boy as long as I've got a darling like you.